Reading is from Genesis chapter 4. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your face downcast? If you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must master it." Now Cain said to his brother Abel, "Let's go out to the field." And while they were in the field, Cain attacked his brother Abel and killed him. Then the Lord said to Cain, "Where is your brother Abel?" "I don't know," he replied. "Am I my brother's keeper?" The Lord said, "What have you done? Listen, your brother's blood cries out to me from the ground. Now you are under a curse and driven from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. When you work the ground, it will no longer yield its crops to you. You will be a restless wanderer on the earth." Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. Today you are driving me from the land, and I will be hidden from your presence. I will be a restless wanderer on the earth, and whoever finds me will kill me." But the Lord said to him, "Not so. If anyone kills Cain, he will suffer vengeance seven times over." Then the Lord put a mark on Cain, so that no one who found him would kill him. So Cain went out from the Lord's presence and lived in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Cain lay with his wife, and she became pregnant and gave birth to Enoch. Cain was then building a city, and he named it after his son Enoch. To Enoch was born Irad, and Irad was the father of Mehujael, and Mehujael was the father of Methushael, and Methushael was the father of Lamech. Lamech married two women, one named Adah and the other Zillah. Adah gave birth to Jubal. He was the father of those who live in tents and raise livestock. His brother's name was Jubal. He was the father of all who play the harp and flute. Zillah also had a son, Tubal-Cain, who forged all kinds of tools out of bronze and iron. Tubal-Cain's sister was Naamah. Lamech said to his wives, "Adah and Zillah, listen to me, wives of Lamech, hear my words. I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for injuring me. If Cain is avenged seven times, then Lamech will be 77 times." Adam lay with his wife again, and she gave birth to a son and named him Seth, saying, "God has granted me another child in place of Abel, since Cain killed him." Seth also had a son, and he named him Enosh. At that time, men began to call on the name of the Lord.
And you know, at one point, Rob will deserve a round of applause. Again, he picked up the challenge and pronounced the names. Thank you, Rob. When I was away on holiday, I was in France, but we got English TV, which I didn't really want to watch, but it was Wimbledon at the time. And so, of course, I was quite interested in that. And I'm sure I didn't get the complete hype of the men's final, but there seemed to be a lot of excitement because, of course, Andy Murray, the first British man for, 74 years in the final of Wimbledon. And it seemed that the whole nation was behind him, or maybe the BBC was trying to get the whole nation behind him. I couldn't quite work it out. But it was very exciting. And during the course of the couple of days in which the semi-final and then the final came around, it seemed that hope started to grow. At first it was like exciting, he's in the final, and then it was like he could win this, you know, he could win this. Federer's an old man, is he 30? An old man, he hasn't won for 2 years. It's Murray's time, this is his time. So we all gathered Did everyone gather to watch? Yes, few. Because you like tennis, don't you? Don't let me down now. Yes, so we all gathered and the final started. And you know, it looked good, didn't it? So I thought, or was I getting a different channel in France? First set, very exciting. Second set, there was Murray pushing for a break. And in my, I started to get hope and excitement, and I thought, this could be it. Because beforehand, I was like, no way, no chance, no. It's all going to be a, you know, wet fish. But no, second set, pushing for a break. And then Federer got the break and got the set, and I thought, it's all right. No need to panic. And then we got to that game. There was a game. 3-3, was it, in the third? Went on for 20 minutes. Break point after break point after break point. But Murray was saving them. And I thought, it's okay, it's on this game. If he gets this game, he could get the match. And then he lost the game. And he suddenly started to think, oh, it's all going to happen again. Federer's going to win. The British are not going to have their champion. And he's going to be runner-up. Of course, that's what happened. In the end, the roof was closed, a decisive moment, and Roger Federer got his shots together, played his tennis, and once more was Wimbledon champion. History, it seemed, was repeating itself again. We may have wanted things to be different at the start, and we may have thought at one point in the match that things could be different, and we may have had great hope right at the beginning. But in the end, the result was as it had always been. No one won from Britain. And this came just a few weeks after Euro 2012, which I know you're really not interested in, but still I'm going to mention it, where England had been knocked out in the quarterfinal on penalties yet again. History repeating itself. Again and again, especially in sport, it is proved that trying to change history is actually much harder than we think, even when we have great hope. And our passage this morning brings more proof of that, if you like. We start at the beginning, or near the beginning, of Genesis chapter 4. But we understand when we arrive at the start of our story today that it follows on from the story of Cain and Abel, who had already had a devastating failure in the Garden of Eden, as they had desired to take what was not theirs, to disregard the instructions of God, to become their own masters, if you like, leading to the expulsion of humankind from the garden that God had created. So when we begin our story, the story of this new family, Adam and Eve and their children, we find Adam and Eve not growing and flourishing in this wonderful garden and land that God had given them, but instead beginning again on the other side of paradise. And to start with, actually, things go fairly well. Eve becomes pregnant and gives birth to a son, who they call Cain. And then later, she gives birth to another son, who they call Abel. Abel looks after the flocks and Cain works the soil, and each of them offers back to God what they have been given in thankfulness for all that he has given them. All looks good for this new family as they begin their lives together, and we hope that things will continue. Even though they're no longer in paradise, we hope that they might at last have turned a corner, and that finally things that have gone before might be put behind them. It's the beginning of a new game, or a new set, if you like, or it's the start of the second half, and spirits are high, and we think things could be good. But then, as Paul Shepherd explained last week, if you were here, things start to go a little bit wrong. Cracks start to appear in this new beginning. And eventually, Cain's nose is put right out of joint as God accepts Abel's offering above his own. And suddenly we begin to get this same old feeling that actually things aren't going to be that different after all, and history is perhaps about to repeat itself in the most unfortunate way. God, of course, knows that this might happen. And so he warns Cain, just as he did try and warn Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden. But, you know, it sort of seems like the first two sets have already been played, or we're already on to penalties, because Cain's not listening to God's instruction. He's already started to walk down a road that has been well trodden before. And he says to his brother, let's go take a walk. Let's go to the field. Let's go get away from everyone else and be on our own. And when finally they're far away from all that they know, Cain does the most terrible thing. In his bitterness and his anger and his disappointment, he turns on his own brother and he takes his life away from him. And in that moment of rage and anger at his rejection by God, the very first murder is committed as the life of Abel bleeds out into the ground. Cain, it seems, like his mother before him in the Garden of Eden, has finally taken something that God asked him not to take. Only this time it's not fruit, but it's his own brother's life. History is repeating itself, but with far more devastating effects. So it's not surprising that when Cain returns after committing this awful act of murder, that God, knowing full well what has happened, calls out to him and says, "Where is your brother Abel?" Just as he called out to his parents in the Garden of Eden, "Where are you? What's happened? What's going on?" And Cain, in almost identical fashion to Adam and Eve, denies all knowledge of the awful act which he has committed. "I don't know," he replies. "Am I my brother's keeper?" History repeats itself, and God has to take action. And he does. He takes action because Cain has killed his brother. He's taken a life. And Abel's blood is crying out from the ground for justice and vengeance. So just as he did in the Garden of Eden, God acts by banishing Cain from his presence. So he ends up living in the land of Nod, east of Eden. The land of Nod, characterised not surprisingly by wandering, an area of wandering and drifting, with no real secure, solid foundation. A place where people have no home, they just wander around with no real purpose to life. And there, Cain is left to live, carrying the burden of the awful thing he has done for the rest of his life. History has well and truly repeated itself, from Adam and Eve to Cain and Abel. And you know, in a way, it's quite easy to understand why Cain might have gone down that route. I mean, in a sense, this is the sort of life he's grown up with. He has a life with parents who themselves lied and stole and were banished. And so it's not really surprising that, being brought up in that environment, he goes the same way. I've talked before about how I watch a programme called Obese, A Year to Save Your Life. You might think that's a bit odd that I might watch that. But it's quite enjoyable because there are these quite obese people who have a year to turn their lives around. They're literally on the edge of having heart attacks or strokes and things like that.
And this man called Jesse comes over from America and turns their life around. But what surprises me about that program, or doesn't surprise me, is that often the people in it are not isolated in their obesity, but that when you see their families and their parents and their partners and their children, mostly all of them are either overweight or obese. It's as if they've grown up in a certain environment. And not that something hasn't happened, obviously in most of their lives something has happened so that they eat to excess, but it seems that they've grown up in an environment that when something does happen, eating is what you do. You eat for comfort. You eat to feel better. You eat because no one loves you. You eat. And that's the environment that they've grown up in. And when you watch the programme, you sort of think, is there really any hope that they can actually live differently? Because all the people that support them are exactly the same as them. And so they need to have support from people who are going to live different lives. And you know, here in the Bible, when we look at Cain, it's easy to think, well, actually, where's Cain's support? He grew up in a family where Adam and Eve disobeyed God and were banished from the Garden of Eden. And then he went and did the very same thing. And he was banished from God's presence. There's a sense that history here in this passage is stronger than anything else. And it will just draw Cain to do the same things again and again and again. But the interesting thing when you actually look at this passage and study it and read it is that although it's a passage about the sins of a family repeating themselves and the awful act of murder and the result of that, which shouldn't be ignored in any way, the main focus of the passage is actually more about choice and the consequences of that choice. Because although Cain found himself in a situation where he was angry and he was hurt and he was bitter and he was desperate for revenge, the situation that his parents found themselves in, we're told that the way he lived his life in the light of this situation was actually entirely up to him. Or in other words, after Abel's offering had been accepted above Cain's, Cain had a choice. He wasn't simply drawn by fate or in the clutches of history. He actually had a choice about what to do once he had been hurt, once things had gone wrong. Even in the land that his parents had been banished to, even far away from the real presence of God in the Garden of Eden, even when things were at their very worst, Cain had a choice. He could choose to follow history and do what his parents had done. He could choose to follow his desires. He could choose to follow learnt actions. He could choose to do what those before him had done, which would result in murder. Or he could choose to listen to God and to live a different life. And even in this land where Adam and Eve have been banished to, God urges Cain to make the right choice. He doesn't just leave him on his own to decide what to do. He urges him. He says, if you do what is right, will you not be accepted? But if you do not do what is right, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you, but you must rule over it. God says to Cain, come on, Cain, you've received a cruel blow. You're tempted to walk in one direction. Sin is waiting for you. But you don't have to walk that way. You have a choice. You can act differently. And God urges him to act differently. I wonder how different things would have been if Cain had heard God's plea. But he didn't. And instead, the terrible consequences were a devastating act which broke a family,
and resulted in a life of wandering, and a history that, as Rob read, repeated itself again and again and again. Until we get to today, to us. And shockingly, we realise that we too are often tempted to walk in the ways of Cain. Of course, I'm not necessarily talking about murder, that's quite extreme, but rather the fact that we too are tempted often to live as if history's already been written for us. You know, to live life as if we have no real choice and can make no real difference. Who are we? Just people who live and then die. We live as if we can't break the mould in which we've grown up or been created in. And we make the same mistakes again and again and again. And we have the same old thoughts. And we think, oh, well, it's not really a lot I can do about it. I mean, it's not that we don't try. It's not that we don't attempt to be different. We try. If we're parents, we try not to be like our parents, but we end up being like them anyway. We try to be different parents to our children, but then we often find that we're not. We try to be better friends. We try to be better workmates. We try to be good people. We try to make a difference. We try not to do the same mistakes that we've always done. But often we find we simply follow the same patterns that people before us followed, or that we've followed all our lives. And sometimes we don't seem to be able to change. History repeating itself, day after day after day. And we have all sorts of cliches to make ourselves feel better, but we often don't really have any real solutions. And I guess that's probably because it's really hard to live differently. The Apostle Paul in the book of Romans finds the same thing when he says this: I don't understand why I act the way I do. I don't do the good I want to do, and I do the evil that I hate. I want to do what is good, but I don't do it. I don't do the good that I want to do. I do the evil that I don't want to do. So if I do what I don't want to do, then I'm not really the one doing it. It is sin living in me that does it. So he says, I have learnt this rule. When I want to do good, evil is there with me. It's not easy to live differently. As God says to Cain, sin is crouching at your door. It desires to have you. But as this passage shows, it's not a foregone conclusion. And the important thing that we can hear, that Cain did not hear, is that we have a choice. We have a choice even when we feel far from God. We have a choice when life seems to be alien and we can't seem to control it. We have a choice when things are at their worst. We have a choice. And most importantly, wherever we stand with God and however we feel, we have a God who urges us to make the right choice and gives us the strength to take the right steps. Do you know, I wouldn't say I was a real fan of Harry Potter, although I've read all the books and watched all the films. So does that make me a fan? I'm not really sure. But in some of the books, there's some quite good words that are said. And in one of them, Harry, has anyone read the books? Harry is quite worried that he is like his archenemy, Voldemort, because, to be quite honest, they are very similar. But Harry has chosen to follow the path of good, whereas Voldemort went down the path of evil. But Harry's having this dilemma. He's so similar to Voldemort that he's worried that he's going to become like him. And Dumbledore is talking to him, wise old Dumbledore, and he says this. He said, it is our choices, Harry, that show what we truly are, far more than our abilities. It is our choices
that show what we truly are. And as we live our Christian lives, the same thing is true for us as we follow God. Because we're never going to live perfect lives here on earth. And we're all going to have different talents. But the important thing is that when we're faced with issues, we make the right choice. And I'm not talking about making the right decision and doing the right thing. Instead, I'm talking about the fact that we don't believe that history's already written. And we don't give in and lie down to temptation. But actually, we stand up. And we make a conscious effort to choose God. That in all situations, we choose the God that is urging us to do right. And we attempt to live differently. It's our choices, or our choice to choose God as Christians, that makes us different people. We don't always have to do the right thing, and we will always make mistakes. But if we keep choosing God, we'll keep following his path. Until we find that actually when we look back, our history is very different to what it was before. Of course, what we must remember looking at this passage is that even though Cain walked the path of history away from God, God didn't leave him. And as we get in and among all the difficult names and things that Rob had to read, we see hope. Because Cain, when God said, "You are to wander in the earth," said, "I can't bear this. People who find me will kill me." And God, in his grace, puts a mark on Cain. We often see that as a bad thing. But in his grace, he marks Cain so that Cain is protected, that he is not killed, he is not mistreated, but he's looked after by God. Even in his sin, God protects Cain for the rest of his life. And Cain is granted a new family, new life, new hope. He starts a family of his own. And out of that family, out of that line, if you like, in history, come many skills for life that people have picked up. We're told that there are skills looking after livestock, that there's skills for playing instruments, that there's skills for making tools. These don't come from Adam and Eve's line. They come from Cain, who sinned and failed. And yet out of this line come skills and gifts. God's still working in history. And for Adam and Eve, God grants new life after the death of one son and the expulsion of another. There is a new baby. God still works, even when things have been taken from us. And right at the end of the passage, it said, "At this time, people began to call on the name of the Lord." In this new land, which was outside of paradise, people once more turned to God, because God is working. And so as we turn to pray for our world, even though we look at things and we think of the murders and the disasters and the problems and the way people have turned their backs on God, God is still working, and God will still work. So we should pray.